No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey and the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I am joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. For the past several weeks, we have attempted to start a dialogue that may provide some answers and hopefully find some reasonable solutions to the escalating violence in our society. This is a complex problem, and we've dedicated many shows to it. Last week, we had a special guest from Lad Everett, who's the communications director for the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence. And this week, we invited the National Rifle Association to come on and respond, but they declined. We also invited another group. I can see Annie Oakley there chomping at the bit. We invited another group as well, and I will let Kathleen explain to you why the NRA are such big sissies and won't come on. So please let me introduce without further delay, like I have any choice, my co-host, Kathleen Gomez.
This is Annie Oakley here. And my dad says I don't give you any chance to talk. But you don't. You know, I think it's the reverse.
That's
I don't
because think your you ever dad is anything. Brilliant. You don't give me a chance to talk.
Listen. They didn't decline. Now, we're so called. Okay. I mean, I don't know if you would call us journalists, but I think we're supposed to be fair, right? We're on the air or whatever it is. All right. So about 2 weeks ago, I started calling the NRA because I knew you would have all these people to talk about, you know, why we should make guns into jewelry and stuff like that, right?
Exactly.
So I figured, no problem. I'm going to be able to get somebody. I'm going to call the NRA directly, Virginia headquarters. They'll tune me into somebody. Well, you know, 4 or 5 times I talked to different people, public affairs department of the National Rifle Association in Virginia. That's their national headquarters. And they just, I don't know. I don't know if they're afraid of the unknown, if they don't feel that strong about where they stand, because our show, you know, I mean, you are against guns. I'm not like, you know, everybody's got to have a gun, but I do. I'm more pro-gun than anti-gun. And, you know, I explained to them, I told them that, you know, we had a very, you know, eloquent person from the other side, and that this was their chance to be able to talk about why they feel so strongly that we should have guns and it's a Second Amendment right, you know, and all that good stuff. They kept on saying they'd call me back, they wouldn't call me back. So I called them, okay, we're going to look at the request. They just like, they would not respond. And I said, you know, I don't have to have someone from the national headquarters. I'll have, you know, give me somebody from Arizona. But nope. And I can't understand that.
Well, look, we know you're out there listening, and we know there are a lot of members of the National Rifle Association. So if you're out there and you have an opinion about why your right to own a firearm should not be infringed upon in any way, shape, or form, call us at 888-429-5471 because we want to hear from you. And part of the problem, I'm disappointed that the National Rifle Association is not on, not because I was looking at getting into a fight with these guys, but because we're never going to get this right until we can all come together and figure out a solution. As long as it's you can't touch my guns versus we're taking your guns, it's never going to happen. We got to all sit down at the same table and find a way to defend your Second Amendment right and protect our children and our society. So call in. Let us know what you feel.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know, everybody who belongs to NRA pays a membership fee. And part of that membership fee is given to them to go on to shows like ours, to be able to promote the cause, to promote the reasons why the NRA feels as strong as they do about a lot of certain issues. And they should not be afraid to come on to anybody's show and explain it. I mean, Lad Everett sure didn't have any problem explaining his issues.
Well, and he accepted right away. He said, right. Yeah, I'm the communications director. This is a way to communicate. And he accepted right away. And you're right, they should. But we see this time and time again in politics, especially where people are afraid to say the wrong thing more than they are about saying how they really feel about things. And that's a problem, too. You know, we're running America by, you know, political exit correctness. Polling. Yeah,
well. Exit polling or political. Well, you're right. People are afraid to say something because they may get, you know, I don't know, they lose their job because of it or something like that. But it's just disheartening because I learned something from Lad Everett last week that I didn't know, and I felt that, you know, he kind of changed my viewpoint in that he's not against guns. He's not against people having guns if they feel they need to protect themselves, and that local jurisdictions should have the right to decide so that what you do in D.C. does not impact me here in rural Arizona out in the middle of nowhere where I can see two drug cartels from each mountainside, you know, signaling to each other. You know, this is two different scenarios, and he realized that. And I've never really heard that from any of the anti-gun organizations. And I think that was a real telling point. And I think that, you know, that was one of the things I was saying to him, that these organizations kind of have to go out there because everyone, I guess it's maybe the way we look at Democrats and Republicans. It's like, okay, if you're for gun control, then you're going to take my gun away. And it's so extreme. And if you're for guns, well, then, you know, you want to shoot. You want everyone in everybody's house to have a gun. So, you know, we're so far apart because we're so afraid to talk to each other. And unfortunately, I think the NRA really missed an opportunity because, you know, we have a lot of people who listen. We know because we hear back from people. They don't want to talk on our show for some reason. Maybe they don't want to interrupt our flow, Senator Brown. But I wish they would. I wish they would because
I know the reason.
Why
they don't
want to
talk on the show? Her name's Kathleen. Her name's Annie Oakley. They're afraid.
They're afraid I'll identify.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, we gotta get people talking to each other on this issue, and it's you know, I don't want to get too far afield here, but since we don't have a guest today and we really don't have much planned, I want to talk for a minute about what's going on in Washington right now with a shutdown of the government. You know, we're so far apart, and let me start by saying that this, of course, like many other things, affects the District of Columbia in a way that it affects nobody else. Since the District of Columbia has to have its federal budget, its budget approved by the federal government, we cannot spend our own local money to do things like trash collection and make a Medicaid payments and pay our school teachers. We can only use our own money for emergency personnel. And that's not true in Arizona or in other states. You guys still have all your state services, even though you don't have federal money, and your federal services and state services probably too are affected by the fact that you don't have the federal money. But we got no money. What we've been doing is we've been spending our emergency money that is a kind of a discretionary fund, but that's going to run out on Tuesday. We've even been picking up the trash for the federal government because their federal the guys that do it for them are furloughed. So once again, the district suffers because we're not equal, and we need to make the District of Columbia equal. So if guns isn't your issue, make sure you call 202-224-1212 and ask for your congressman or your senator and tell them to support the D.C. statehood bill, the new Columbia Admission Act, because that'll make the people of the District of Columbia equal. And, you know, what you were talking about, Kathleen, about the difference between Arizona and Washington, for example, we had one of the monumental cases that has changed gun law or is now changing gun laws decided in 2009 by the Supreme Court. It was called, we call it the Heller case. And it was about D.C. And the court found that our gun laws were so strict that they didn't allow people to protect themselves and therefore were unconstitutional. And this is really throwing a monkey wrench into the works here in Washington. But I went out and protested against this in front of the Supreme Court. And there were a bunch of gun people that got in an argument with me. And they said, they started yelling at me, why do you want to take away our guns? Why do you want to take away our guns? Don't tell us what to do with our guns. And they were all from Virginia and Maryland. And that really struck me. And I said to one of them, I don't want to take away your guns. I don't want to tell you what to do with your guns. I just don't want you coming into Washington, D.C. and telling us what we have to do with our guns. Because the law that Heller struck down was 70% of the people in District Columbia thought it was a good law. So I think that's one issue, is that we do have to respect that Arizona's Arizona, Washington's Washington, New York's New York, and the same rules shouldn't apply to gun ownership.
Right. Montana is like, you know, and Wyoming and those countries are those countries.
Sometimes they
feel like those countries. But those states definitely, you know, it's a different environment. It's a different culture. So, yeah, I must say that I had somebody tell me, why don't you, because I actually put it on Facebook and asked somebody to call in, you know, who from rural Arizona or a rancher or something like that, because I didn't have enough time to try to get one on. And you know, it's funny because I thought we would have so much feedback on this issue. But of all the issues we talked about, this is the one that I've gotten least feedback. It's like people have already made their mind and they just don't want to talk about it. I was really kind of shocked by it because I've always had many people come back. You know, when we did college loans, we had a lot of you know, reaction on that. We did on the border security and on voting. But on this one issue, I guess people just have made up their minds. They don't even want to talk about it because I just had little action on it.
The thing that gets me, too, is that I really want to talk to people because I think this is more than just about guns. You know, when I talk to people privately about this, they express all sorts of other feelings connected to this, like, I want my gun because I don't trust the government. Well, that's a different issue altogether, whether you trust the government or not. I don't, you know, the issue that you brought up, that I don't know what's going to happen in the future. I want to be able to protect myself if some great calamity comes along, you know, something like 9/11 or Hurricane Sandy, or God forbid, some other great natural disaster or man-made disaster. So there's all sorts of feelings tied up with this, and I think we need to get to those issues before we can solve the problem.
Well, there's also, too, women, you know, when you're driving out here in rural Arizona, I mean, you can go a long time without seeing another car. And if you're traveling at night and you have a flat tire, you're pulled over. I mean, you don't know anymore if it's going to be somebody from a drug cartel or, you know, a good guy from, you know, a ranch, or you just don't know anymore. And that's how society has changed, that has made us all so nervous now. Because, it, you know, when I was growing up, just like people who were coming across the border, I mean, they were family people. They were just looking for options in which to feed their family. Now it's you know, we've got Russians and people from, you know, Afghanistan and Pakistan and India coming over the border. It's not just the Mexican guy looking for some way to feed his family. So
wait a second.
It is. You know how many?
Wait. Hey. You're telling me that you're worried that a drug cartel guy is going to pull over and help you fix a flat tire?
No, he might just shoot me on his way by.
I think he's just going to go by.
No, he's going to actually pull over and he's going to terrorize me. That's what's going to happen.
terrorize you.
Yes.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about that. Yeah. I'd worry about you terrorizing him.
Listen,
but
listen, let me tell you something.
No, I appreciate the fact that women feel, you know, where a woman might feel that that
yes,
to have protection. And you know what? I don't even I don't have a problem with carry permits, but I think that people that carry guns, especially people that carry guns in public, ought to be able to use those guns. They ought to have to qualify somehow.
Well, yeah. They have to pass a background.
They ought to have a license and a background check. And And I've got no problem with law-abiding citizens, and they can't, and they shouldn't be concealed. You know, I mean, I know that people get strange looks, but I was just in a restaurant in Delaware where the guy came in wearing a gun, and he must have had a permit. I mean, he was a civilian looking guy. I don't think he was a
sheriff or anything.
Law enforcement. He might have been, but I don't think so. And I testified before the New Hampshire legislature, and two of the people sitting on the legislature carry guns. And that's what I mean about it being more than just about guns, because there's no way you can convince me that some guy who's a state senator is sitting in the state house in New Hampshire, surrounded by all sorts of security, and he feels the need to carry a gun to be safe.
Hey, listen, in Arizona a little while ago, I'm sorry, I can't remember exactly the details, but there was a guy outside the courthouse. He was a legislator, and this guy started shooting at him, just a random guy who had a gun. And this guy, well, I don't know if it was Arizona. Remember, it was on the news because this guy, his gun went off like I don't know how many times, and he never hit the guy. Do you remember this? It was on all the news stations.
Yeah. I've certainly heard of those incidents.
Okay,
but
so, you know, I mean, I think it's at a point where people feel it's just so crazy that they have to protect themselves. And sometimes they feel like if they – I can imagine that judges and stuff like that must feel threatened all the time. I mean, maybe they – I don't know. You know, the world is just getting crazier, and it's not the same. And so maybe that is why people feel they need to protect themselves.
Well, I understand that need, but adding more guns to the mix, how does that make it less crazy? That's the problem that I have, is that we see the statistics, and countries that have the most guns have the most violence.
Well, let me ask you, what are you going to do? There's so many guns out there. How are you going to control the guns? How are you going to ever get that managed? I mean, you don't think just if I go and buy a gun, I'm making that many more guns out there? I mean, they're already out there. Why not have honest citizens have them instead of, you know, people who maybe are not law-abiding? And I agree. I think, you know, the whole thing with mental issues is one of the biggest problems. Remember, we were talking about how the day of Ronald Reagan, when I think it was 1987, when the stock market crashed, everyone thought it was going to be the end of the world. And then they started to cut back on all kinds of social programs. And one of them was basically letting the mental patients out, you know, and there really never has been a strong advocacy for mental problems, you know, just like in healthcare. I mean, this is the least funded one, and you really need more money for all of the mentally unstable people that there are, because there's more than I guess ever. Maybe we just know more about it, but that is a big issue. There should be background checks so that hopefully families who have domestic violence in them, because that was something that was interesting that Ladd Everett said, was that, you know, that should be part of the background. And I think it's true. If you have somebody who's committed violence, there's been, you know, if they have a restraining order, I don't think they should be getting a gun. I don't think they should have a gun.
Well, and that's a really big problem with what's going on these days with the NRA and with a lot of the, let's call them right-wing or conservative gun groups. They don't even want that. I mean, this is what these guys in Colorado, you know, we talked a little bit about this last week, about the two senators from Colorado that got replaced. That's what they were talking about. They're talking about background checks. They're talking about limiting the size of clips. You know, I don't understand. That's the thing. I don't understand why you need a 30-round clip, But if there's a reason for it, if there really is a legitimate reason for it, can't we pass laws that allow you to make some special exemption for certain people that might have a need for that sort of armament? Why it's readily available? Why there's these loopholes in gun shows where, you know, they can sell guns to anybody? I got to tell you, I went into a pawn shop in South Carolina. I was in Myrtle Beach a few weeks ago, and I went into a pawn shop just to see how easy it would be to buy a gun. And they would have sold me, you wouldn't have believed the kind of guns I could have bought. And they had no problem with it. They told me I could get a background check right there and walk out the door with the gun and the ammunition, and all I needed was a South Carolina driver's license, which, of course, I didn't have. So I said, thank you very much. I'll be back.
How do they do a background check on you right there? They just would run something through to see if you had any felonies?
Yeah, just like when you're buying a car, you know, and you say, okay, I want to put $1,000 down on a car, and I want you guys to finance it. They run a credit application on you, and 20 minutes later, they come back and they say, okay, sign here, here, and here. You got the money.
Well,
it's the same kind of process.
I know what people are going to say. First of all, it creates more bureaucracy, you know? And a lot of people, it's funny because a lot of people who are very pro-gun are against federal government. We talked about that too, you know, about how there's just such a, I believe in the federal government. I think it's a good thing. I don't think it's all good. I think they're definitely, you know, the IRS with all their spending and all that, that was definitely, you know, a black eye on the administration, and that kind of stuff shouldn't be happening. But there is a need for it, but there's a real movement against federal government and more for state rights. But these people would say, this is just another way, you know, when you want to limit how many bullets I can get, it's the first step that you're taking to limiting them completely from me. Because it's just like when people say, you know, when a city council passes a tax, it's never, and they say, okay, it's going to sunset, that tax never really ever goes away. They find another reason because it's now going, it's on the books, so let's just pass have a vote and we'll use that money now for something else and sunset. You know, it's that kind of thing that once you pass a kind of law, it just doesn't go away. It creates more
law. But laws that prohibit things tend to remain static over time. I mean, we haven't seen the laws that require you to register your car result in having your cars taken away, or tougher regulations for consumers with cars. Maybe for manufacturers, but not for consumers.
What about prohibition on alcohol?
Well, they repealed it.
Well,
you know they repealed
it? Because
people like you had guns. And they said, well, we have two choices here. We either have, in all seriousness, it's the way democracy works, right? We had that kind of small, I don't want to call them evangelists, but people – you know, Carrie Nation, we remember the names, Carrie Nation, and who was the other one that you know, used to go around smashing beer barrels.
Right.
You know, they passed the law against prohibition. But then when and I'm not sure it slowed drinking down that much, and it helped, you know. I mean, they just did a series on PBS about alcohol.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like a Ken Burns kind of thing. And when they passed the laws about prohibition, people were drinking on average, I forget what they said, like 7 gallons of liquor a year per person, per capita. And it went down to a third of that after prohibition was – you know, after they amended the Constitution and got rid of prohibition.
Well, maybe people needed to drink back there. Yep. You're out in the middle of nowhere, like with nothing to do. So what else did you have to do? There wasn't TV. There wasn't radio.
So let me get this straight. Now you're drinking with your gun. You want to have a gun and you want to drink too.
Well, yeah, you know, we used to go out and shoot stop signs. I mean, I, you know, all that kind of stuff.
I'm sure you did, and I hope the Department of Public that's listening in Arizona, because I'll provide them with your address and phone number.
Okay, I'll know where I am.
Yeah, that's another problem with guns. You know, I've got to admit to you that I did some stupid things with guns when I was a kid. I mean, played around with them. I hunted a little bit. I knew the basic operation of a gun. I've been shown, you know, by elders in my family how to use one, but I really didn't know what the hell I was doing. And that's another problem with guns. Another problem with guns is that people get inadvertently hurt with them, and those people are very often kids. Or you know what you were saying last week, that you get mad at your husband, mad at your wife, mad at your, you know, we got people.
Well, yes,
recently where some guy shot his mother and father in the driveway. He was a police officer, and he got in a fight, and, you know, and his father, I guess, was a very overbearing guy like me. This is why I don't let my son Nicholas have a gun. And he, you know, he got in a fight with his father, and the guy shot them both.
Just, well, I mean, that's always going to be there. I just think that people think there's so many guns out there that when you start to figure out how to get rid of them, you always start with the people who are law-abiding citizens. And you start by telling them they can't get this gun or they can't have this many bullets. And I'm not sure what you do, because I think, didn't we try passing if somebody had a gun when they were, you know, picked up by the police, that would give them an extra, what, 10 years? Or I don't know, maybe it varies from state to state, but I know.
Well,
that,
yeah, there are
different, right?
State laws, yeah, about,
if you
about
have a gun
crimes
on
committed
you,
with a gun.
Right, and if, yeah, it's on you when they arrest you, that's just an automatic more time to, yeah, what you're going to serve. And that hasn't really, I don't think that's done much to make criminals think twice about having a gun.
Well,
you know?
You're only saying that because you're talking to people in Arizona that want guns. I'm telling you that murders in the District of Columbia are at an all-time low.
Well, why is that? Because you don't have guns, or because people do have
guns?
Well,
I'm not sure. All right. I can't say that it's because we don't have guns. Maybe it's
because
people are just coming to their senses more, and there's more, you know. But I think tougher laws have something to do with that. I mean, if our legal system really is a deterrent, then don't tougher laws? Doesn't it make sense that tougher laws act as more of a deterrent?
Well, not to the people who are law-abiding citizens. They just see it as another way where you're punishing them. Because they do everything right. They get, you know, they go to classes, they get their registration, they get background checks. And now you're just, you know, only people these laws are going to really, really impact are the ones who are law abiding. You know, so that's the where they're coming from. They don't see any of these laws really making an impact on the criminal. I mean, look, in New York, you know, okay, I can't have a gun. I'm a citizen. I'm glad I don't have a gun in New York, because we were talking about my crazy neighbors who got
right.
me so jumpy, right?
Right.
But at the same time, anybody who wants to commit a crime seems to be able to get a gun pretty easily, and the laws there do not make it difficult for criminals to get guns.
Well,
so,
you know, but you know, this criminal thing, this tag that you're using, that is a misnomer in itself, because, you know, these guys say you can't take the guns away from law-abiding citizens, but look at the people that are killing all these people. They're law-abiding citizens. Adam Lanza in that killed all those babies in Connecticut, he didn't have a criminal record. The Virginia Tech shooter didn't have a criminal record. The guy that shot Gabby Giffords didn't have a criminal record.
And they're all
citizens.
They're all disturbed white men. Have you noticed that?
Well, you better notice it.
I am. I'm just saying to you those crimes are committed by a typical white male. I mean, it's funny that you know, these kind of mass killings are all done by.
Well, that's true.
Men, serial right?
Killers.
And the regular.
Too, you know, very few women serial right. killers, very few minority serial
exactly.
killers. Yeah. And that's something that needs to be explored in our culture. Why is that? Yeah.
Exactly. Right. So, I mean, I guess the bottom line is it's so complicated because you got to look at all the fact that we basically don't have any services for the mentally ill. And when that guy walked that was shot, you know, what was his name that shot up in the Navy Yard just recently in Washington, had mental issues and was asking for help and was denied because mental issues, when it comes to the federal government funding anything, that's on the bottom of everyone's list. And maybe that should be moved up to the top. And I think one thing that they've showed with these you know, kind of mass killings is that all these people were very disturbed. People knew, had known that there was something wrong. It wasn't acted upon. The parents knew their children were not right. And it's very hard for parents to accept the fact that your child is, you know, that you know that something is wrong with him. And they should have. They should have gotten him help. And I mean, they'll forever, I'm sure it must be a terrible thing to have to carry. So why, you know, and there was somebody who said, you know, why can't family members who know that's, I mean, but can you imagine the dynamics of that? Like an Italian family who says, my uncle, you know, he's a crazy man. Don't give him a gun, you know. And then it's another big fight and they all get guns and shoot each other. I don't know. It's mental issues is definitely one of the big issues, the fact that we don't fund the programs, the fact that there's no place where these people can get help, even when most of them ask for it, they're still denied, whether it's a health insurance issue or they have no insurance or it's just a matter of funds, you know? So that's
well, and the Navy Yard shooter is an example of why that background checks aren't perfect either. This guy had a security clearance. So obviously he had a more of a background check than you would normally have for a gun. But you know, then again, there was a loophole that he went to Virginia and tried to buy a handgun and they wouldn't sell him a handgun because he didn't have a Virginia license, but they sold him a shotgun. That was no problem.
I don't understand that.
Yeah. So, you know, we've got to tighten up the laws, and you're right. We do need more psychiatric care, and we do need some more psychiatric screening. And to our listeners out there, while I check into more psychiatric screening for Kathleen, we're going to take a break, and we're going to play a song from the Temptations, Ball of Confusion. Because that's the way Kathleen and I feel. We just don't know what's going on. We need to work it out. We'll be back in a few minutes. Please call in to 888-429-5471. Back in a few minutes.
Skin. Run, 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 but you sure can't hide.
And we're back. And that's what we think the world is today, a ball of confusion. So please call in to 888-429-5471 and straighten us out. Give us your input because Kathleen and I don't know it all.
I can't believe you said that. No, you said that? You don't believe it all? I can't believe it. I can't believe you said that.
Well, I believe that I know it all. I just really don't. So, but back to, you know, trying to come up with some reasonable choices here and some reasonable laws that protect everybody's interests, we really got to get people to sit down at the table and talk, because some of this just doesn't make sense. And I understand that people are afraid and they have a right to protect themselves. I absolutely agree with that 100%. But, you know, we're looking at the Virginia election, for example. There's a Democrat named Terry McAuliffe running against a Republican named Ken Cuccinelli. And McAuliffe is a hunter. He owns guns. He says that he believes in your right to protect yourself, and I believe that's true. But the NRA is putting in $500,000 against him because he also believes in things like mandatory background checks and limiting the size of the amount of bullets that a clip can hold. And they don't like that.
Well, I guess that they come from, and I wish they were on the show to make sure that I'm not misquoting them, because that was a mistake to try to have me be someone who defends the NRA, because I don't know everything they stand for. But I think their view is that once you start legislating this issue, it's just a bureaucracy, and it's impacting those who are doing the right thing and not those who are getting guns illegally or you know. And then I guess what I hear is that there's just so many guns. How are you going to, at this point, be able to control the issue? How are you going to be able to get some kind of, a hold or be able to start taking guns off the street because there's just so many of them?
Well, I think there's a lot of things you can do. But first of all, let me tell you, I don't agree with what you're saying about the NRA. I mean, I think that's their official line, and I think they're trying to convince people of that. But I think what they're really trying to do is sell more guns. I think they're nothing more than a trade association disguised as a public interest group.
Right.
You know, just like the Tobacco Institute or the, you know, we know of others over the years that have tried to promote things, but they're really all about selling guns. I don't think these guys care one way or the other about your rights as an individual. I think they just want to sell as many guns as they can, and they figure if they whip you up into a frenzy, you know, that's the oldest trick in the political book, right?
Right.
I'm your friend, and what you need to do is be worried about that other guy. You
right.
know, one of my favorite politicians of all time was from New Orleans, Louisiana, and he used to say, Huey Long, he used to say, you know, there's 100,000 Frenchmen in New Orleans, and none of them care about you. Only Huey cares about you, you know, and he did care. He cared enough to steal most of the money he could get his hands on. So it's really an old tactic to pit one group against another. And that's really the challenge for people like me and Kathleen, I think, is to try to figure out a way to bring them together and get them to sit down and talk. And look, if Andy Oakley and I can talk.
That's
like
true.
Like the rest of America.
That's true, because we, you know, one time you got me so angry I had to pull off the side of the road. And just to be able to keep on talking to you, and you wouldn't stop talking. So, yeah, if you and I can find a way in which to talk to each other about the issue, I don't understand why people are afraid of that. I don't understand why it makes me question anybody who does not come on to any show, because it's to promote the cause of what you believe in. And if you have nothing to hide, then you wouldn't be afraid of coming on this little internet talk show, you know, called Shadow Politics. And even if you do feel that it's a left-wing or a liberal, you know, show, what should that matter? That should actually make you want to come on even more so that you can talk and make your point. But I think that, you know, by not coming on, it just kind of really, really kind of shows that there's something else going on. And I think you're right. I think they are a trade association that does, you know, when you call them up, public affairs is maybe this, you know, or issues is the number five thing. You know, it's membership, it's going to the shows, you know, it's everything else, but not really the public advocacy is that given that much I think merit to it. And then really they should really be trying to explain to people why they believe they do, just like, you know, President Obama should be, you know, there should have been more explanation on the healthcare to people. And it's kind of like, I kind of relate the NRA to like the pharmaceutical companies, because, you know, it's all about, you know, selling you their drugs, and maybe this is all about selling you more guns. I don't know.
Well, I think we need to look at the statistics, and I think that we see that countries that have less guns have you know, less violence.
Well, no, that's not true. Canada has more guns than people, and they have less violence. So there's something else about, I think.
Yeah,
about,
but they have less guns than we do.
No,
I don't think anybody has more guns than we do.
Well, per capita. I mean, they have a lot of guns for the amount of people that are in Canada, because I read that as a statistic too. But they don't use it on each other, you know, like we do. So
yeah, and there are definitely other things going on.
Right,
look,
right.
We all understand that it's not just about guns, because you know what? I had plenty of access to guns growing up. I grew up in a working class family, and although we didn't own guns, I went hunting all the time with friends who would loan me their, you know, their fathers had a dozen shotguns. I knew lots of people that had handguns and shotguns and you know, and we didn't have the same kind of mass murders that we have today. I mean, I think it's too simple to say it's just about guns. You know, I don't know if it's violent video games. You know, I love, one of my favorite things in life is to watch one of these commercials for the video games where the guy blows away 32 yes. people on his way to steal a car or something. And then at the end it says rated M for mature. And all I can think to myself is anybody that's actually mature would not play this game. You know, that ought to be a, if you're buying a game, you're not mature. It should be a catch 21, you know, that they take it away from you.
You know, all these kids. I mean, I look at my two sons. I mean, I'm really excited when my younger one wants to buy soccer, like FIFA, instead of Grand Theft Auto, which has always been a thing with my boys because I hated that game when it first came out. And it's the only one in theory that I haven't bought for them, even though I know they got other people to buy it for them. But, my older son was like, there's something when you're sitting there, he's telling me that Grand Theft Auto is worse because you put a name onto the people you kill, and when you're like on Call of Duty where you're just shooting up all the bad people. But there's still something. You're shooting people. You're shooting people. So I think that definitely has had an impact on these kids, especially how often and how long they play these games, you know? I mean, in Japan, they have a little disclaimer on this stuff. Like, if you watch it more than an hour, you can, like, what is that thing that you just blow up or something, you know? They've had those cases in Japan where it's just like you just, I don't know. What is the name for it? You know what I'm talking about, right?
No.
Yeah,
I know that in certain countries like Sweden, you're not even allowed to advertise to children below a certain age. And I mean, I think it's pretty high threshold, too. I think it's 15 or 16. You're not even allowed to advertise to. And I think that's a great law. We push too much junk on our kids, you know. Yes. And images are really, really important, especially in that at that age. I mean, look, like when we were that age, when I was that age, a teenager, back when Ben Franklin and Tom Jefferson were walking around. But I was a hippie, you know. I had long hair. And why did I have long hair? I had long hair because I wanted to be different like every other 17-year-old in America, you know.
Right.
But we didn't see it that way. We thought of it as expressing our individuality.
Right.
And that's an image we got to rock and roll music, which came of age there, and pop art and those sorts of things. You know, we thought, people with long hair are cool, man. You know, I bring this up because I had an older sister who used to say to me, it's not that I have a problem with long hair. It's just that you in particular look stupid in long hair. Now I'm going to have to post a picture of myself somewhere. But I thought she was just, you know, she was just square. She didn't understand.
Right.
So now I pull out pictures and my kids say to me, Dad, you look so stupid with long hair. What were you thinking? You know, exactly. Yeah, but I thought I was cool, man. I thought I was Paul McCartney or something.
And you have like those bell, you know, what the blue, what were they called?
Oh, yeah, bell bottoms. Yeah.
Yeah. Hip, and they wear long, like
hip
around
huggers,
the hip.
Hip huggers.
Tie-dye
t-shirts.
Yeah, I love power.
Platform shoes.
Oh.
I get it all, man.
Oh, my
Crushed
God.
Crushed velvet.
Oh, did you use the real big lapels, you know? And all that stuff? Wow.
Yeah. Big peak lapels that came out past your shoulders.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And the ruffles when you got dressed up. And
absolutely.
Ruffles.
Yeah. I was a hideous looking creature. But,
well,
but you have to, all those people out in America that are listening to this have to forgive us because we had a case of massive hysteria called disco for a few years, you know, where the whole country went crazy.
But I was a disco dancer. I was that, you know, I had the whole outfit and I get up, I knew all the moves. I had the little ballerina, kind of like, it was like a ballerina costume because you had that skirt that was like scarves, you know?
Yeah.
And then you had it was definitely good. If you were a dancer, disco was the time because
I had the platform shoes.
Well, we knew you can't dance. We know you never could dance. So that was why you didn't like the disco time.
I'm a Vic Domit Dance School graduate.
I've seen you dance. Remember? I've seen you. It's called The Wild Chicken.
The Wild Chicken?
Yes.
You can't be confused with somebody else. You're lucky my lawyer's not here.
See, this is why the NRA should have been on this show so they would have kept us focused.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
They couldn't take the pressure from us. I guess we're really – maybe they listened. They just decided that we were just, you know, I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you what. As soon as we get video capability, I'm going to dance, and we're going to put that up.
All right. That sounds good.
And we'll see who's chicken then.
One thing I wanted to ask you is that, you know, with this government shutdown, I think people don't really understand, like, the city of Tucson still has the money from their taxes, their city taxes, to be able to pay for the – they're pleased to be able to keep their parks open for people in Little League and all that stuff. And you guys cannot do any of that. Is that correct?
Right. It's absolutely crazy that in the district, because our budget has to be approved, we can't use our own locally generated tax money to pay for those things that you talked about. Now, there's an emergency contingency which allows us to pay for police and fire. So what happened was the mayor, when they shut down the government, the mayor of the District of Columbia declared all personnel in the District of Columbia essential.
Right.
Therefore, he could pay those people, but he had to pay them out of a special fund that we have for emergencies. He can't pay them out of the regular locally generated tax dollars that we have, because that would violate a law that was passed called the Deficiency Act in the District of Columbia, which requires the Congress of the United States to approve our budget. And since they haven't approved our budget, it has to be signed by the president. How ridiculous is that? I mean, the president doesn't sign Tucson's budget. The president signs two budgets. He signs the federal budget and the District of Columbia's budget. So this actually led to an incident this week where we had a press conference on the lawn of the United States Senate. And while we were having our press conference, Democratic senators were lined up, also holding a press conference on the steps of the Senate. To talk about the government shutdown and things that the Senate was doing to try to move things along. Your friend Mark Warner was there.
Mm-hmm.
Kathleen and I used to work with Mark. And after the mayor gave his speech, he went over to the steps of the Capitol and let Harry Reid, the leader of the Senate, know exactly how he felt about us not being able to spend our own money. He said to Leader Reid that this was not federal money we were talking about. This was local money. And Reid said back to him, "We understand." That we're on your side. Don't screw it up, was what Reid said. And then he got in an argument with Barbara Boxer of California, Senator Boxer. Now, the problem with this, we understand the frustration the mayor feels. I certainly understand it. And I support him in his effort to try to get money to keep the city running. But Harry Reid is our friend. He's a supporter of the of S-132, which is the statehood bill that would make the District of Columbia equal. And if we were equal, we wouldn't have this problem. We'd be in the same position as Arizona. So he's one of our big supporters. And Barbara Boxer, Senator of California, also one of our big supporters, one of the first people to sign on to the statehood bill. So tension has gotten so much here in the District of Columbia. It's become so tense over the money and having to lay off teachers, because this is what we're going to have to do next week. We're not going to have enough money to pay for charter schools and make a payment to charter schools. And there's over 40,000 kids in the District of Columbia in charter schools. We're going to have to stop making Medicaid payments. And some providers are surely going to stop giving out services. It's going to get critical in the District of Columbia. And so there's so much tension over here that we're even fighting with our friends about it.
Well, and that's, I think, a thing that people, you know, when they look at D.C., you know, they kind of think it's, well, it should be easy for these guys. But there's so many complex issues, and we know, we've seen it many times, that things will get decided upon, and the public thinks, oh, well, they decided on A, that's great. But it might have been Z and Y and R, those issues that, you know, came under something that we'll never know about. I mean,
well, that's a
very
complicated. That's a very old saying in politics, isn't it? That it's like, yes, making sausage. Making legislation is like making sausage. You really shouldn't watch the process because of exactly what you just said. God knows, you know, we've seen the craziest riders put on bills that have nothing to do. You know, you're talking about a military appropriation bill and somebody sticks on a rider to name a highway in Oklahoma or something. I mean, it's just crazy sometimes the stuff that gets glammed together. But I'm sorry, go ahead.
And people got to understand that, like, we had a highway named 666, and it came from I-10 and it ended in Douglas, okay? So maybe, you know, 666, guns. But all of a sudden, some state legislator guy or whatever got this rider put onto, I don't know what it was, some transportation bill, and decided he was Christian, that there should be no highway named 6666, even though it had been there forever, and they named it 191. But the amount of money they had to get appropriated, because now all the maps have to be changed, all the signs have to be changed. Everything has to be changed. Everything has, every action taken has a cause. And there's always some kind of money that has to be along with that decision, even in renaming a small road in, you know, Cochise County in Arizona. But that might have been put on under one of these. I mean, it's just amazing. And it is like a sausage. You don't know what kind of meat is being put in there, but you're hoping that it's not going to kill you at the end of the day.
Well, you know what? And this really is our biggest problem in the District of Columbia, is that we have nothing to trade. And that's the whole thing, that, you know, the bill to change the highway name, that gets glammed onto something because they need that guy's vote. And that's his issue. So he says, well, yeah, I'll go with it if you add this. Well, we've got nothing to trade here in the District of Columbia. We've got no votes to trade. So,
well, you know what you should do? You should do, when you have to close everything. I mean, most of these guys live in D.C. Not all of them. Some of them live in Virginia, Maryland, but a lot of them have houses in D.C. You guys should figure out, like, you know, either the traffic lights that are right by where they come out and have to get on the road should be, like, not working, or don't pick up their trash. You know, and then you got all the diplomatic embassies there too. I mean, you know, it is a really dire thing for D.C. because it not only is just a local budget, but it impacts all these people. Like, all the embassies in the world are located in D.C. And if you don't pick up their trash, what happens?
Well, and that's one of the problems, is that certain Homeland Security things won't be funded, and there's a lot of targets in Washington, D.C. that have to be, you know, protected that wouldn't in other places. But I think that a scarier thought might be to threaten them that we're going to give Kathleen Gomez a gun and a carry permit, because that
let me come out there.
Action.
Let me come out there and get them to vote. Just, you
well,
know,
we're sorry. We're
gun.
Just about done here, because there's only a minute or two left, and we're sorry that we couldn't get the opposition to come on and
sorry
talk about guns.
Sorry for the NRA. Sorry for you.
And next week we're going to move on and talk about the government shutdown and what that means and how it's a negotiating tactic and what it means to the American people. Hopefully it'll be resolved by then.
We hope to have some special guests. Right.
Yes.
We have a guest who's a
guest. Yeah, we hope to. Yes, we've invited somebody. hang in there for another week, folks, and let's see what happens. And we want to give an open invitation to the National Rifle Association.
Anytime.
Anytime they want to come on.
That's right. We'll talk. So all you guys who belong to them, call their member, call Virginia headquarters and tell them they made a mistake by not coming on our show.
That's right.
There you go.
Okay. And we'll talk to you next week, America. Thanks a lot. And tune in again.
That's right. Thanks. Bye from Arizona.
Bye from Washington, D.C. In the capital of this nation, 100 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right.